This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to the Deceptively Fast Podcast. I'm Seth Payne. Today I've got my friend Drew Hodgden. And we actually start off, because I had never asked Drew about this, just about his experience at Arizona State and the current Herm Edwards experience. Then we move on to some comments that Tom Brady had made about the, I don't know, the wimpification of the NFL, I suppose, and whether or not we agree with him, or if we agree with him but think maybe he's a little bit of a hypocrite for having the opinion that he does. And also, we ended up on the Black Death, the plague, the great mortality of the 1300s. It's all relevant. It all ties back to football somehow. Trust me. Hey, leave a 5-star review, subscribe on iTunes or wherever else you download your podcasts, and enjoy the show. I feel irresponsible that I haven't asked you out of Herm Edwards once in the last 2 years, 3 years. How many years has it been now? Is it 2 or 3 years?
I think it's his third year.
Is he still, though? Is he
or it might be his fourth. It might be his fourth if COVID was the second.
Is he better than what you expected?
Well, so when it's funny because when it started out, I thought it was a horrendous idea.
Yeah.
Like horrible. Right. I mean, it felt like a stunt hire.
That's what you're I thought, too.
Yeah, you're getting like the biggest name possible that's out there. He was attached to the NFL, so why not put him in there? And the guy like hasn't actually seen modern football, especially I thought it was a rough fit based on what his experience looked like in New York to go to the Pac-12, mm-hmm. which is just such a strange, innovative, offensive kind of conference. I was like, there's nothing in his repertoire history that looks like he's going to be able to pull that off in the Pac-12. So I thought it was just going to be a bloodbath. But what he did do well initially is he hired really awesome assistant coaches.
Right.
Like he had those two, he had the offensive coordinator and the defensive coordinator, both who have moved on to bigger, better places and have done great. And they worked out. They exceeded expectations the first, you know, couple of years for the most part, but he can't recruit, which is the most shocking thing about it.
Yeah. I thought that's what he would be good at. Yeah, I figured he would be good at recruiting, but he obviously had zero clue about like the actual regulations or anything. I thought that he would accidentally violate like 20 different rules. But that he'd be a good, especially for college, because I figured he'd be a good motivator.
Well, I just figure look at all these college kids. You just think, at least at the time, maybe he's not relevant as much now, but a lot of those guys, Herm Edwards walks into your parents' living room. You know, I feel like at that point you have a 50-50 chance of getting just about anybody to commit. Yeah. I mean, ASU is a pretty easy place to go. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see. I think they're going to be a tough, the conference in general is looking, I'm pretty, other than UCLA, the pretty sad situation in the Pac-12.
What was your recruiting trip like when you were a student? I don't want to, don't get anybody in trouble. But
no, not at all. I think the irony is that, you know, you say you go to ASU and the immediate reaction every single time is, oh, but you got into some trouble there.
Yeah.
But that was a good time. You know, it's like instant and it's brutal. But what was funny is that because I took a trip to USC, a couple other places, and my trip to USC was by far and away just the most over the top, scandalous, he got game kind of experience.
Yeah.
And ASU was a lot of why I wanted to go there was because, you know, it was Bruce Snyder was the coach, but it was a very normal run of the mill kind of experience that I was like, this is a place that I can actually survive and go to school and actually do something, you know, which is of course ironic because of the reputation ASU has.
Right. But I guess as far as just academically and all that other stuff, you just felt comfortable.
Yeah. I mean, it was the guys that hosted me were very normal, salt of the earth kind of dudes. Whereas like at USC, you know, I mean, they like took us to Lakers games. We were going out downtown. I mean, it was like, there was the booze was free flowing. I mean, there was, you know, narcotics all over the place. It was just
really,
like, it was a bit much for me.
No kidding. It was like, it was almost like, usually you figure, okay, things are exaggerated for the sake of Hollywood or just urban legends or anything, but you probably, did you get there and you're like, oh my gosh, it really is like this at USC. Like this is like something you'd see in a movie or a TV show.
Oh yeah. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Okay. And you know, who was the my liaison was Ed Ogeron, who's at LSU.
He
was the guy. Yeah. And I couldn't
understand.
You could
have been his Joe Burrow, man. You could have been his Joe Burrow.
I really missed the opportunity. Yeah. I mean, I would have won a couple national titles, probably gotten drafted sooner, but yeah, you know, that was the difference.
So speaking of Ed Orgeron and Joe Burrow, and you know, like nobody's gotten more credit without doing a thing in the last 24 hours than Joe Burrow and Joe Brady. Because everybody,
totally.
I woke up this morning and I didn't watch the rest of the game last night. I figured LSU was losing. And I wake up this morning and all like my timeline just happened to be all this like, wow, Joe Burrow really doesn't get enough credit for that 2019 season.
No, he sure doesn't. He doesn't get enough credit by getting drafted, basically, you know, number one overall.
And, people in Carolina are just besides themselves because they figure, wow, Joe Brady's going to turn Sam Darnold into the next Joe Burrow somehow, even though Joe Burrow hasn't done anything in the NFL.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think he got the exact right amount of credit, I think, is what happened there.
That's where he was fine. Do you think LSU is done for? I mean, is it just a matter of how much time do you buy? How much time do you get after winning a national championship in modern college football these days and then going 5-5 in a COVID season? And then if it goes poorly again this year, I mean, maybe Chip Kelly is just that good. Maybe UCLA has just figured it all out.
It's really interesting. I mean, he's Ogeron at LSU. It's such a good case study because he's so beloved by the fan base and by people there. And he's such like a personality.
Yeah.
That it's overwhelming. I feel like that buys you a couple losses of padding, you know, just in and of itself.
Well, yeah. I mean, less, I'm part of me surprised still that Les Miles is gone, but it was, he put up a fight on his way out, you know, for those same reasons.
He did. Yeah. And that, well, it's because at the end of the day, they just figured that in the conference like that, as ugly as it is brutal. I mean, they're still consistently relevant and their defense is just so dominant just because of the guys that they're constantly bringing in. And it seems like Ed could replicate that. He can probably do the same thing. And they did have a better offense. I mean, they had a better offense under, you know, most of the coordinators they had there when he was there. So after Les left.
So I don't know if I'll be able to play this audio or not, because I have to abide by the rules of my organizations, which means I need to get written permission from the people that put out Tom Brady talking about how basically he gave his old man take that, you know, the illegal hits are over the top and football isn't played the way it's meant to be played. And he made some really good points about how modern quarterbacks they're throwing the ball in places that used to be impossible to throw to in the NFL because you would have gotten your receiver killed. Like the classic, you know what? We did used to say a lot more like, oh my gosh, he's going to get his receiver killed. But now guys kind of just lob the ball up over the middle and the penalty or the tax isn't nearly as much as it used to be. So Brady was saying that these young quarterbacks are getting away with playing fundamentally unsound football. I think he got all the popularity points that he should get for having that take. But at the same time, I've got two thoughts. One is, all right, well, is it really fundamentally unsound if you can get away with it these days? And the second one was that, you know, Tom Brady's been operating since the year 2008 when the NFL clarified and made more severe the penalties for low hits on quarterbacks because Tom Brady got hit low. And they call that part when they changed it after the 2008 season, that's the Tom Brady rule. So I don't know, man. I feel like a little bit of this was Tom just trying to look hard.
Yes. I mean, I think that he's probably perpetually like a hardo in that way. There's no doubt. But and on top of the complete lack of awareness and the irony that he not only benefited from that rule, but the Tuck rule, which was also another ridiculous situation the Patriots personally benefited from.
That's true. So, but at least they hadn't changed the rule. They enforced it for the first time anybody could ever remember against Tom Brady. But that was before Brady was the beloved face of the league that he is, that he became after the Tuck rule game.
I don't know. I remember it being, I mean, I specifically remember watching that, and it seemed like they had decided to create a legend in the moment. is what it felt like. Yeah, for totally unbiased at the time.
Was that was that their first Super Bowl or their second one? That was their first one, right? Yeah, it was the 2001 AFC divisional round.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, I mean, I mean, the first one that he would go to. So
correct. Yeah.
The thing about that is that, you know, they weren't even, I mean, he wasn't even guaranteed to be the starting quarterback going into that game. Or I guess Belichick knew going into the Super Bowl that it was going to be Brady, but there was some controversy over whether it should be Brady or Bledsoe.
Yeah. Yeah. Blast from the past. But I mean, I think what's interesting, I think if you take what he was saying to its furthest conclusion, at least the way that I interpret it, is it wasn't even just about the ball placement and defenders not, you know, being able to instill that kind of threat or fear into the receivers to keep them honest. It was also, I feel like you see quarterbacks now, they're throwing the ball specifically in ways and in places to draw penalties, to incite that kind of reaction from the refs.
Yeah.
Knowing that, and he's saying, like, you know, it's fundamentally it's a bunch of BS. Like, it's almost like it's no different than, to me, like in the NBA, where you have guys you're not creating, or in soccer, situations where they're incentivized to try to play for the foul instead of, you know, and that's, you know,
that's one thing. It's always in football, I do enjoy if somebody gets shoved after the play and the guy flops, I kind of enjoy that. The receivers, because it's just funny. But the receivers accentuating contact has become a real thing. Yeah, yeah.
That's like a new thing. That's in the last like few years where there's melodrama.
Except
in the game now.
It's fun to watch because, as infuriating as it is, they also now have to be careful that they don't get flagged by a spotter. So it's like they gotta accentuate the contact, but also not look hurt afterwards, because then they're going to have to go do a concussion test.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that.
Dude.
Yeah, that's true.
Hey, I met a guy who's a spotter once, and he swore me to secrecy. I can't say which team he spotted for or anything like that. But the big thing that he wanted to impart to me was, Seth, dude, I have no medical training.
Exactly. Yes.
He's like,
that is not surprising.
I was like, well, what happened? There was a specific instance. I was like, well, what happened in that game? He's like, yeah, I know. That was the one. I'm pretty good. I think I'm pretty good at my job, even though I don't have any medical training, but I really pay attention. That was the week I was gone for a bachelor party, and they just had some guy fill in for me and my buddy. That's when the guy got hit, and it wasn't flagged right away, or he wasn't, there was no alert on this guy. Yeah. So that's, it's one of those.
How surprised were you though? Really?
Not much.
Not at all.
The NFL is so weird about being a multi-billion dollar revenue organization. They cut corners in the weirdest places.
Totally.
It's so strange.
Why are you doing that? It's like, oh my gosh. It's like a massive oil company. Just like, well, you know what? I mean, maybe we won't plug up the holes in that tanker. It's just so expensive.
It's a Suez Canal.
It's just so expensive.
Suez Canal, people.
Yeah.
Did we make it wider? Nah.
It's just so, it's too costly. Got it. Yeah.
I don't know. But I guess that's on the Players Association too. There are some things here where it's easy to blame the NFL, but you got to say, well, all right, it's on the Players Association. As far as what Tom Brady is saying, I do respect that Brady is a guy who I think he's old school and that he does feel it's his responsibility to not get his receivers killed. Like he's so good at his right. ball placement and everything that he can do it. But it's probably hard because in a way he sees guys that are throwing it and these other guys are going to get their receivers injured, but they're going to get away with it for a lot longer. And like to the point where I could see what he's saying where like, look, this is fundamentally unsound, but guys are getting away with it because they can throw that way for an entire season and maybe their slot receiver doesn't get hurt. But at some point, you're going to have to pay the piper. And so like he's trying to watch out for his guys. And it's one of these paradoxical things where by enforcing the rule more strictly and creating that rule, you almost invite opportunities for it to happen more often because the balls are just going to be out there more often.
Yeah, it's completely, I think it's one of those things where they've created, the conditions for more. More often it's going to happen, just like you said.
Have defensive backs gotten better at it than you thought they would be, though, like with the targeting?
I think they adjusted probably about as quickly as I would have expected. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of people were shocked that it didn't happen faster or it was the alternative and they thought they'll never be able to figure it out. I mean, they're phenomenal athletes, the best on the planet. They're going to figure it out relatively soon, especially when competition comes into play and you realize that when you make those mistakes, you're hurting your team. What I think will be more interesting long-term are who are these people that are going to end up wanting to even play those positions? I don't understand. Like what I just always thought, I mean, what is even the benefit of all you get? It's only downside. I feel like really it's
playing receiver.
Of playing defensive back.
Defensive back.
You know, over the middle. I mean, it's just like it's such a thankless job at this point.
Especially
you don't even really have like the benefit of, you know, doing anything exciting.
I think a lot of safeties, maybe this is wrong because now I was about to say, I think a lot of safeties are guys that maybe otherwise would have been running backs, but maybe now are saying like, yeah, but why bother? But that's not really the case. I think that the better, if you're like Emmitt Smith told us this once in an interview, he said, look, you go out to any little league or youth football camp or anything, and all the kids want to be the running back or the quarterback. Like that's just what you want to be the guy with the ball in your hands. Mm-hmm. So I think there's that, because I was about to say maybe running backs will just go start playing safety and defensive back, but I don't know. As far as safety goes, I mean, what else other place is there? It's the new linebacker, right? If you're an inside linebacker or anybody else, what's the alternative? Go play football or play baseball? Drew, do you know how rich you have to be to make it as a baseball player these days? You got to go to like travel league. You either got to be dirt poor in Latin America and get signed when you're 14, or you got to be pretty damn upper middle class and go on travel league all year long.
You got to make that
decision long before you realize like, oh wow, safety's no fun anymore because I can't hit nobody.
And then you have to have like a pitching coach and a batting coach. And
that's
fine. Yeah, I didn't realize it wasn't the plebeian sport anymore.
Hey, you asked me a question that I guess maybe at one point I should have asked myself this before I just started doing it, but it was about using emojis at work because it used to be frowned upon. Like you actually read an article that said that it was frowned upon to use emojis at work. And now I feel like it's, especially during the pandemic, everybody got super casual and comfortable with the emojis, didn't they?
Yeah, I feel like the entire culture around how we communicate and engage with each other, the lines have become so blurred between our home life, our work life, our social life. And then also you have all these apps. I mean, a lot of people are using they use Slack or they use something else. They use Teams when they're at work, so they're communicating. So you slide right into the normal routine of sending, like you always do, where you're sending me eggplants, you're sending me peaches, you're sending me all those things.
They don't even have the eggplants.
And it just happens so.
Shut
up. They should. Well, they should. Agree to disagree.
What's peaches supposed to be, a butt?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Come on.
Can you do different skin tone peaches?
That would be very meta.
Because I think I think the peach is implied to be probably like a white butt, right?
A white girl butt, yeah.
Oh,
or
no,
it's just like,
figured...
or it's a piece of fruit, and it's going by shape, Seth, and not ethnicity.
Which I guess Well, those two obviously would get you flagged for sexual harassment. Like sometimes I'll accidentally send the wrong emoji because your frequently used ones are all up there. So sometimes I'll send my wife like the crying laughing one when it's actually the quizzical one eyebrow raised skeptical look. But like if I were frequently using the, what is it, the peach emoji or something? If you accidentally send a peach emoji to your boss, there's no taking that back. You're either going to have sex with her or you're getting fired. Like, that's it.
No. Or you're saying, I've been baking a lot and made this cobbler.
You have to go in court.
And now you got to like go full on.
About it. I use the thumbs up emoji a lot with work when people text me or something.
I do the shorthand on those. I don't want to say never. I don't know that I would ever do it with someone outside the organization professionally.
Somebody, a client or something.
Yeah.
You wouldn't even do a thumbs up emoji.
What are we doing? Like via text, not via email.
No chance. Okay. I don't think I've ever. Plus the email emojis are kind of
weird.
Yeah. They're not, the dimensions aren't right. They look like old Soviet emojis or something. But they had emojis during the Soviet Union. Right. It's like a little too blocky and weird. Hey, I was reading this book about the Black Death.
Some light reading.
The plague of the 1300s.
It's very apropos. I like that.
Listen, though, it's crazy. Because this was written before this current pandemic we're in. And it does. There's part of me that I'm reading this book about the plague where like some cities lost 50-60%. At the time they claimed like 80%, but I think most historians are skeptical of the 80% of some cities, but 50% is reasonable in some of these cities that they lost like 50% of their citizens. And one of the big reasons obviously was just basic hygiene, so the plague, I didn't realize the plague exists still. The bubonic plague still does. And that they've had little minor outbreaks of, it wasn't the plague during the Soviet war in Afghanistan, but a lot of other diseases like public health type diseases. And they're saying that these Soviet soldiers change their underwear on average once every 3 months. And that like guys that worked in food service wouldn't wash their hands after they dropped the deuce, all this stuff. And that so that. You were just so much more likely. Remember in the Civil War, like where you're more likely to lose, die because of dysentery than enemy fire. It was like way even worse than that. Like it just these guys were diseased all over the place. They just
what era is this? When is this?
This was like the Soviet War in Afghanistan in the 1980s. Yeah, this wasn't even that long ago.
So they just weren't supplying them with underwear. Is that what was going on? They just literally were short of the kind of supplies they need to do that. Are you saying that Soviets are dirty and filthy? And you're implying
Soviet soldiers back then. That was in they're not. So there's no Soviets exist anymore. I'm not saying anything about any like particular country or ethnicity or anything. But
what was the condition that was resulting from that though? They weren't getting the plague.
They were getting like cholera and typhoid and all these other things. Yeah. So. But it was funny though too, is as much as people are fighting right now, it made me feel a little bit better about how polarized everything is right now, because in a lot of these Italian city states and like in these French, I guess they weren't city states at the time in the 1300s, but everything was a little bit more tribal back then, like everything was more close knit within these cities. Mayhem, just complete loss of order in some places. Other places kept it together and figured it out. Like, I guess Venice was really good. Like, this author is bragging about how Venice was so good at people abiding by what the authorities were saying, and they separated everybody, and they still lost 60% of their citizens. So I don't know. Like, it was all for naught, because they would these ships would be out there floating on the Mediterranean, desperate to get into a port, and people knew that there was something going on. They didn't know that it was the Black Death yet, as of they were in the middle of it, but they knew that something was going on. But every now and then a ship would sneak through somehow, sailors would get off and boom, that's it. It's like something out of a cartoon. Like people are dying within days all over the place, you know?
Right. Well, think about the additional risk associated with all those things when you just, they don't have the instant communication.
Right.
They just have no way to instantly tell you not to pull into port, not to, you know, and so there is no quarantine at that point. They don't know where it's happening, or they find it and they can't communicate quickly enough to someone else in another part of the city. So it just spreads.
And then a big, very popular back then was to, you know, they had all kinds of theories about whether, like, there was one theory that there was some gas that left the eyes of the people that were, like, they thought that somebody that had the plague, if they just stared at you, there was a gas that left their eyes and got you sick because it was just so contagious. There were stories of, like, a couple pigs would find a shirt in the street and start sniffing at it and tear it apart a little bit. And then within an hour, they were both dying on the, like writhing on the ground, dying. And then the other popular explanation, Jews, very, very ugly time. Very, very ugly time for Christianity.
Hey, that train's never late.
Oh my God. Yeah. That was, that like somehow, some way they figured out in Switzerland of all places, they started this theory that, you know, one of these grand Jewish conspiracy theories that there were like these very specific people that were sending out satchels of plague poison to Jews in various cities, and the Jews were distributing it. So yeah, it was, that was ugly. Then there were, oh man, it was just,
so this has made you, this has reinstilled maybe a minor sense of faith in humanity coming out of our current polarizing era.
It does.
It does.
It does a little bit. But I'll I've also seen some parts of our society today where I'm like, gosh, you know, a lot of social media has almost turned into a medieval rumor pool or a Middle Ages rumor pool where everything, like, you can say stuff and people will believe it. And all of a sudden they might even, the only thing that's helps and it's different now is that it's, I don't think people are as likely to actually take action because they're stuck on their computers. Like they're just as much as we've seen some things take action. Like, I don't know.
I was like, I'm trying to follow you down this one, but I'm trying to be
optimistic
here. Now
in a lot of these cities it was like parents killing children,
right,
you know, everybody abandoning other people, each other, not just, and part of that's just the fear of the contagion, you know, but yeah, the actual, I mean, this was, some of it was just logistically impossible to have a government because they were talking about like there was a mad rush to get your will done.
It died out though, right? That was essentially how it did.
I haven't gotten to that part yet. I assume we made it out of the plague. It's been 700 years. I'm pretty sure we got out of it.
Yeah.
After a while, there's kind of a critical mass of like number of people for it to be an epidemic with the plague, because it's also, it requires the, anybody feel free to correct me on this if I'm completely wrong, people associate it with rats, even though it's not the rats specifically, it's the fleas that are on the rats. So when there's a lot of people and a lot of refuse and poor sanitation, the rats are all over the place like crazy. So the fleas get spread real quickly and then, and then boom. But okay. So basically Tom Brady is
responsible for the plague.
Yeah. He also, in this interview, also said that he had COVID, I guess, right after the Super Bowl, right after the parade.
Did he really? Yeah, I missed that part.
He got COVID right up. Well, yeah, it wouldn't have been. I mean, that's what he. Yeah. He had it right after the parade. So.
Oh, wow.
All right, man. I will. Let's do something during the week this week so you can catch me up on college football.
Nice. I like it. That'd be good.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.